One of his first paid gigs was photographing a can of fruit. But after joining a little-known startup magazine called Rolling Stone back in the late 1960s, our next guest went on to photograph some of the greatest rock and roll stars of all time. Think Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, The Who, Mick Jagger, The Grateful Dead. You name them, Baron Wallman shot them. And this was all before the era of MTV, a time when musos were really much more accessible than they are now. In the late 1960s, there were no stylists, no brand managers, and no minders. It was pretty much a party of three, the photographer, a camera, and the band. And that's how Baron Wallman liked it. He's just released a collection of photographs taken during his 40-year career. They're collated in a book called Every Picture Tells a Story, The Rolling Stone Years. Baron Wallman, welcome to breakfast.
Thank you so much. I mean, that description of how it was then is the most perfect description I've ever heard. It was the three of us and no minders, and now there's nothing but minders.
That's right, and I want to come to that, the changed life of a rock photographer today. But let's go back to where it all began for you when Rolling Stone magazine began back in 1967. How did you come to be taking pictures for Rolling Stone?
Well, I was very fortunate because I met Jan Wenner. You know, I was 30, he was 21. Big, you know, and you
big age gap then.
Well, yeah, because you don't trust anybody over 30. So I had about 6 months before I became 31 when we met. This was before the magazine even began. And he described what he had in mind for a magazine that became Rolling Stone. It didn't even have a name at that point. And told me what it was and, you know, and described it and asked me what I thought. It sounded great because nobody was covering music the way he envisioned us covering music and the musicians and stuff. And he said, well, I need a photographer. You want to be the photographer? I said, sure, why not?
Were you a rock photographer then?
I was a photojournalist, just a broad-based cover-anything photojournalist, work for anybody, hired gun, as it were, with a camera.
Well, it was a decision, obviously, to hook up with Rolling Stone that changed your life, that became your life, really, by the looks of the images in this book. It must have completely taken over your lifestyle. You did something very smart at that time. You didn't get paid a lot when you started with this small magazine, but you did retain copyright.
I got paid nothing.
You got paid nothing?
Zero. They just covered the cost of the film and the processing. In fact, they asked me for money. If I could invest, you know, and I said, well, I can't invest, but I'll shoot for free. You give me some stock in the company. He said, sure, you can have stock in the company because there was no company. So it's no big deal, right? However, and to this day, I just bless the photo gods. I said, by the way, I own all the pictures. You can use them any way you want to, but I own them. He said, no problem.
And how good a position has that put you in the years since?
I'm living off these things.
Well, no wonder, because everyone is in here, really. I can Tina Turner, Little Richard, Jimi Hendrix, Pete Townsend, George Harrison, Janis Joplin, Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez, the whole spread, any big name you can think of, you've shot them.
Fortunately, very fortunately, you know.
Do you have a favorite out of all of that?
It's an oft-asked question, but I had such a great time photographing every one of those musicians. There's some that, you know, stand out a little bit more, but when I look at them and I think about them and I think about the moment that I was with the musicians taking the pictures, it's like if you have children, do you have a favorite child? No. I love them all, and I'm serious. When I use the word love, I have great affection for not only the pictures, but for the musicians that I photographed.
Did you love rock and roll? Was that a big part of your life at that point?
It was a part of my life, not like a music fan in that sense, but it was in my life. And, you know, for example, I'd go into the darkroom at night. We had darkrooms, remember? We had to develop film and all that stuff. And in the middle of the night, it was always rock and roll. It was playing as I was working in the darkroom. In fact, I had to wait until the middle of the night because the darkroom wasn't light tight. So if there was any sun, it would spoil the prints in the film.
But you do talk in the book a little bit about you being an outsider to this culture, which was such an exciting and lively and youthful culture at the time. Were you treated like an outsider, and why did you feel that?
No, I was never treated like an outsider. I felt like it because music was not my entire life. For the people that I photographed, music was their entire life. And I couldn't talk about music in a technical way with them. I couldn't play any instrument. So in that sense, I felt like an outsider.
You might not have a favorite subject out of all of this, or you might, but you're not telling me by the look on your face. But I think you have some favorite photographs. I noticed that there's 4 pages in the book dedicated to Jimi Hendrix, 4 pages dedicated to Janis Joplin. Everyone else gets 2 or 1. What does that tell us?
I'm afraid that tells us which ones are my favorites, right?
So tell us about them. Why were they your favorites?
Well, I know. Here's the thing. Jimi Hendrix was an astounding person in so many different ways. I mean, he was a brilliant musician, no question about that. But he had a presence that was rare. I think when you have a hugely successful entertainer in any field, they have a presence that goes beyond their talent. And that was what he had. And you'd get with him the way he dressed, the way he presented himself, the way his face looked, his gestures and stuff. They were all so photogenic. So it was actually, I say this in the book, it was impossible to take a bad picture of Jimi Hendrix, you know. With Janis Joplin, it was something else because, you know, she was just a young girl, early 20s. She lived in the neighborhood. She came, everybody knows, I mean, her life was very difficult. And yet she was this raw talent that every time she appeared anywhere, this raw, gritty, in-your-face, phenomenal force would hit you, you know? And yet, she was still a young girl. So I always felt like I wanted to catch the moment of her youth before it was gone, and photographically. And so I'd get together with her and try to do that.
Tragically, those two, Jimmy and Janis, never made it through. They never made it past their era. In fact, they didn't even live as long as their musical era. Could you have predicted that? Was there anything in your contact with them that gave you a sense that these two were not to be long with us?
Now, that's a good question. And I tell you, with Janis, it was pretty clear that she was going down a path of, I don't want to say addiction, but where she was losing control. She wasn't even confident about her own success. So she wasn't happy. And so the drugs that she took and things kind of took some of the pain away. Now with Jimmy, it was a different story. I didn't expect this to happen with Jimmy. Jimmy was didn't have an addictive personality, at least as far as I could see. Oh, maybe he liked some of these things now and then. But he was so hopeful about the future when you would talk to him. He was changing the band. He had new music he wanted to write. He just built this incredible recording studio in New York. So there's no indication that he was crossing over to a dark side. I think with him, and I'm only hypothesizing, that it was truly an accident, you know. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't occasionally use substances that, you know.
Oh, sure. He lived a big life.
Exactly. But he didn't do it. He didn't do it like the rest of them, where it became so necessary. Didn't seem that way, at least to me.
There's two styles of photo in your book, really. There's the live performance shots, which are the ones that immediately captured my eye. I mean, the images of Little Richard, B.B. King, Ike and Tina, and the Ikettes on stage. These are raw close-ups. You can see the sweat, you can see the smiles, you're in those smiles. And then there's the ones that are more relaxed, they're more sort of backstage. We've got Mick Jagger just backstage on a film set with a Polaroid, which is a great shot. We've got some very almost diminutive images of Grace Slick just sort of there staring off in the background, not on stage. Two very different types of photography with a very different eye required, I would have thought.
Well, you know, as you actually outlined that, it occurred to me, which is the real one? Which, like, for example, Little Richard. Little Richard's, you know, so forceful when he was singing. And then so, well, Jimi Hendrix, same way. And when they're so quiet when they weren't, which one is the real person? I guess they both are. And you obviously, look, you have to, when you're sitting across from somebody having a conversation, those pictures are going to be a lot different than when you're standing in front of a stage and you're trying to catch some great moment of performance.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. It's 23 past 8, and our guest this morning is rock photographer Baron Wolman. Baron, in the historic 1,000th issue of Rolling Stone, it was said of you that you, quote, had an unmatched feel for the moment when a performer sucked the flattery of a camera into himself or herself, and so got people to come out of themselves to drop their modesty and their anonymity. Looking through the book, I think a clear example of that is that image of Pete Townsend on stage, arms outstretched, looking right at you. There is absolutely no doubt about that, is there?
No, there is no doubt. Actually, there were two, three pictures in the book, actually, where the musician is looking right at me. And I always saw that as a gift, you know. They were giving me this little moment. They were acknowledging that I was there.
How did you feel at that moment when Pete Townsend did that to you? Can you remember that moment?
No, you know, here's the thing. You're so involved in the shooting, the constant shooting. You know, we had a lot of problems back then as photographers. We didn't have autofocus. We didn't have auto exposure. We didn't have auto winder. You know, these days, these guys push the button, it goes, and then they've taken 10 pictures before you blinked your eye. So you had to be totally, totally involved in both the technology and seeing, as I say, seeing the music. So you don't remember one for another. The excitement comes when you develop the film and there it is. You make a contact sheet and you say, oh my God, look at that picture. I got that. I can't believe I got that. No, at the moment, you really don't know it.
Well, it's all different today in many ways. As we said at the beginning, it was a pretty simple setup in those days. No stylists, no brand managers, no minder, just you, the camera, and the band. How different is it today? How different would it be being a rock photographer today?
I think it's hugely different. I mean, it's night and day. First of all, in the interim, what I did has become a very desirable profession. Everybody wants to shoot for Rolling Stone. I get emails all the time. Can you tell me how I can go shoot for Rolling Stone? That's always what I've wanted to do.
And the Rolling Stone photographer is a superstar.
In a way. Well, but she doesn't even shoot for Rolling Stone anymore, you know. I mean, she went beyond that, too. Rolling Stone actually made some careers. But here's the thing, that not only does everybody want to be a music photographer right now, it's very easy to be, in the sense that you go out and you spend some money, pick a number, $3,000, $5,000, you have a camera that does all the work for you. Your biggest problem is getting to a place where you can use that camera to take the pictures.
Well, that's the big difference, isn't it? Access to the rock and roll stars, not just access because it's very tightly managed by their management, but also the stars themselves are so aware of themselves as a brand, aren't they? They see themselves differently.
That's true. This was one of the benefits of when we were working with these people who weren't yet as great stars as they became. It was a unique, for them, a very unique experience to be the subject of a photographer because, you know, it was different. Before Rolling Stone, the only pictures of the musicians that you saw were these PR pictures. They go into a studio, smile, put your thing on, smile, hold this pose, hold this guitar, bang, gone. And that was the pictures that people saw. Well, we came along and we said, oh, yeah, you're a really interesting person. You play this music, you write this music, you make people happy. We're going to take some pictures of you. And those are the pictures that appeared in Rolling Stone. Those were the first time the readers in the nation really saw who these people really were.
You say that MTV changed everything. How?
I mean, I always liked MTV, but what happened with MTV is that the musicians began seeing themselves on television, right? And so they kind of looked at their image and they said, oh, okay, I don't like exactly how Rolling Stone's making me look, even though it's how I do look. I want to control that image. I want to look a little bit glossier. I want to look a little bit sexier. And so they decided, and I don't know if it was intuitive or they just arbitrarily decided, they wanted to have a say in how they were presented in the media. And at that point, they were less interested in what we could offer to them, which I thought was an enormous contribution to their career, than they were in getting, you know, stylized photographs and stylized videos and everything stylized and programmed and approved. And, you know, that's no fun.
So is that when the fun went out of it for you?
For me, it did.
So do you still take photographs?
Well, I do, but only for myself. I don't do it professionally anymore. It's a young person's profession, I believe, especially music photography. I mean, I'm not going to go into these huge Glastonbury things and crawl around in the slime and the mud and the rain and try to fight the other photographers and fight for some pass to get a good angle. I've been there, done it, let them do it, you know.
Of course, these days, everyone is a cameraman on the spot with their mobile phone.
Yeah, and, you know.
What's that done to the business?
Well, no, what it's done, this is my theory, what it's done, it's demeaned or degraded or reduced the perceived value of an individual image. There's still some great photos being made, but they get lost in this huge wave of images that we're subjected to all the time. I mean, people are sending you pictures on your mobile phone. People are sending you pictures on Facebook. People are doing pictures, pictures, pictures. Where are the great pictures? Now, when we were doing this, you have to remember that that was how we communicated, with a still image. That was all there was. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have social media ways to exchange pictures of ourselves. We communicate with the still photograph alone, and that's gone away. The still photograph, even though it's there, in and of itself doesn't have the power that it did.
Baron Wallman, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
I enjoyed it a lot. Good conversation. Good breakfast.
Rock photographer Baron Wallman, and his new book is a collection of his photographs. Every picture tells a story, the Rolling Stone years, and talking pictures, pictures, pictures. Really, there are some fantastic images in there. Mick Jagger the photos of Mick Jagger are stunning. What a beautiful young man he was. And if you live in Melbourne or Sydney, you can go see the pictures. They're on display at an exhibition of his work at Blender Gallery in Paddington in Sydney until the 22nd of October, and also at the Raw Gallery in Melbourne from September 23rd. Really worth a look, I think.